Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. Join late night legend Jon Stewart and the best news team for today's biggest headlines, exclusive extended interviews, and more. Now this is a second term we can all get behind. Listen to The Daily Show Ears Edition on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We back on the wind down. It's been a minute. Yes, we haven't had a wind down conversation in a while.
Right.
I've been traveling.
So you just did two. You did one with Donatella Versace.
My last two podcasts.
And Candace Parker.
Yep.
Two dope women. But two very different stories, but two very powerful stories.
Yeah.
What was that like for you? Doing those, talking to them and telling their stories in each of their way.
Well, it was great. I think with Donatella, one, I mean, she's iconic, right? And, you know, in the fashion space. And so I was thankful that she took time to sit on the Y. I mean, you know, a lot of us love Versace, but a lot of us have never got a chance to hear too much of Donatella really speaking to the culture, in a sense. And, right, you know, we wanted to provide that platform. And, you know, I'm getting to know her. And so the difference of it is Candace, I've been knowing since he was in college. And knowing of her since she was in high school, so forth and so on, where Donatella, we're just getting to know each other. So it's cool to kind of see, like, right now, my questions are maybe a little different for Donatella than they may be for Candace because of I know more.
Right.
But two women who, you know, I have so much respect for what they do in their craft, where we got to know them from, but also what they do outside of that. And so really just really dope to be able to sit with those two women that I admire. And as I said, when I first started the podcast, you know, the introduction was I'm going to sit down with people that I respect and that I admire. And some of them may be big names and some of them may be friends of mine or just people that I do respect and admire. And so to be able to put them both together with the big names and plus the respect and the, you know, how much I admire them both. Was pretty cool. And so I have fan moments in the midst of it too. You know what I mean? And you will hear that inside of the interviews where I go off into a fan moment, but then I get back into the interview side of it as well. So just cool, man. And it opens up the Y podcast to different genres, to different voices.
Love that.
It can look any way. It's not just, you know, this is not just a sports podcast. It's not just a business podcast. This is a podcast where, you know, like I said, anybody who has a story, and we all do, come and tell it in any way that you feel. And hopefully they all feel different.
They do. The ones I've seen so far all feel different. And I think I learned a lot. Is there a moment in Donatella's that stood out for you?
Probably the first moment that comes to mind, speaking of Donatella, would probably be the moment when I asked about the Medusa. Because I've heard so many different stories. Remember, I talked about it. I'm like, yo, what's the real?
Right.
Can you tell us the real, you know, of it? And, you know, that stands out because, you know, it's the education of telling us something that we didn't know. Also, too, besides that, I really loved how she spoke about Johnny. Mm-hmm. You know, I really love how much she spoke about Johnny. and how she spoke about Johnny. I really love that because, you know, my question going in was about the, obviously, the Versace family and brand. And Johnny's a big, big part of it. But also, too, it's a sensitive, it's going to forever be a sensitive button and subject. Right. For, you know, her to speak on, even though, you know, the years have passed. And so for her to be feel comfortable enough to speak of Johnny in the way she did, for me, it felt comforting, knowing that she felt safe sitting on a pod and, you know, and talking.
I love that. Now, so was there a moment in Candace? I know we just kind of did that one.
Yeah.
Was there a moment that stuck out for you on that one? That was a dope one to be a part of, too, because I told you she I learned a lot about her in a way that I didn't. Like, I kind of knew, but I just learned a lot. Like, I love how she thinks, actually.
You see why we love Candace. Yeah. You got a chance to be like, that's why.
Yeah, I get it.
That's why you love Candace.
I get it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I could talk hoop with Candace. Like, she's one of the people you could talk hoop with all day. Mm. And so in the midst of it, you know, of having this conversation, we talking hoop and, like, it's going. But also, too, like, you know, Candace stands for more than just basketball.
Right.
And I wanted to get to some of that. And so probably my favorite part of our conversation was the part where we were talking about our family, you know, where, you know, she was talking about Anya, who is her wife, and, you know, the journey, you know, to, you know, their marriage becoming a public thing. And, you know, as two people in the public eye, how you deal with it and what you know, what's the process? I think that's great for people to know because, you know, can't say that it's the right way to deal with anything. Mm-hmm. But it's good to hear your process because we all go through moments of things that we're a little afraid to share,
right,
whether it's publicly or whether it's just with someone intimately. And to understand that and to hear that for me was a great moment. It was a vulnerable moment. It was an intimate moment to talk about, you know, eventually what got to the decision of her sharing it with the world. But, you know, just the journey to it. And so I thought it was cool.
So it looks like we're in the, so I'm new to LA still. So this is also kind of new for me in the sense where, well, not new because I've been here for 3 years, but award season.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm surprised we never talked about this for the other episodes, but the fact that you was nominated, bro, for a statue, one of them statues.
One of those Oscar statues.
That's big, yeah, bro. That is big.
That's how much stuff we got going on in life, bro. We didn't even talk about the Oscar nom.
Man.
Yeah. It was big. It was a big moment. And it wasn't big like you needed it to make you feel like you're doing anything right necessarily. Just a big moment for the community that we were trying to uplift. You know what I mean? Anytime you can have multiple conversations going on, you know, it didn't just die on just the documentary and, you know, the people who watched it. We took it to people who didn't watch it, who never heard it. We went on TV shows.
Right.
You know, everyone, you know, we did the rounds. And then we got an Oscar nom in the middle of doing the rounds. And now it got even more. And now, you know what I mean? So it was great for our little production company to have these small wins. You know, one lets us know that we're our temperature on finding certain projects to be a part of. John Marcus, who's my producing partner, and myself, that means we have a good little temperature on picking the right people and picking the right projects. And so, yes, Emmy for the Redeem Team, Oscar nom for Barbara of Little Rock, The Dads on Netflix, which we just, you know, we got done not too long ago, which was an important piece. It was great. It's great. It's great to be able to have these small wins because, you know, ultimately with so many things we want to do, so many stories we want to tell, so many voices that we want to uplift and put emphasis on people's story and people's journey. And so it's cool. It's cool to be able to do that. And, you know, and from a production standpoint, you're able to go to award shows with doing that. You know what I'm saying? And so I told my wife, when we were, you know, we first moved to LA and we were, you know, not when we moved to LA, but when we were spending time in LA, we had a house here doing my plan days. And I was like, you know, one day I want to take you to the Oscars or I want us to go to the Oscars as a date night. And I want that to be either because of you or because of me and not just because we can get a ticket. And so it was cool for us to be able to, you know, in the midst of life and our busy schedules to be able to get together and make that promise come true of like, hey, let's go on a date to the Oscars together.
I love it, man.
That was a bar.
That was definitely a bar. Like the fact that you ain't going just because you got a ticket. You went because Y'all was supposed to be there.
We were supposed to be there.
That is beautiful.
So it was vibes, bro. It was great. And we didn't win. And I don't put too much on winning when other people have to decide or on you winning. Like, I put a lot on winning when I can be a part of deciding. When I can't decide, we won by being here. We won by being nominated. We won by Arlo Washington and, you know, John Hoffman and Christine, you know, Turner to be able to tell their stories and how they got here. And, you know what I mean? And other people out there have seen them and was like, yo, being inspired by that, right? Yeah. And so we won in so many ways as a group. Our directors, John and Christine, that's what I was talking about. So it was cool. I got a chance to put on that. Listen, I was great Gatsby vibes. I stepped up on the carpet. I'm a little heavier than I normally am right now because I'm traveling. So I got about 5 or 7 lbs on me that, you know, I like to keep off. I ain't been in my yoga bag or my workout bag lately, but stepped on the carpet with the white and the black, real classic, real great Gatsby like. And my wife was looking insane. And so we just made a great day, great night of it all.
I know both of you, I know you and your wife are big in fashion. Like, yeah, I've been in a bunch of front rows of many of the biggest fashion shows in the world.
Yeah.
What is that process like for you guys when you're like, all right, what are we going to do? Are we going to dress like? Like, what is that process for someone who, like, because people at the, there's shows and shows after, days after, talking about what y'all wear.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a process for you to get to that point and then to know that somebody's going to, quote unquote, judge it afterwards. But then y'all kill it.
Yeah, yeah.
So, with your stylists, and each of you have your own stylist. What is that process like for you guys? And then after that, you got after parties, and I've seen that you kind of switched it up a couple of times. So, like, what is that process for you, and how are your process in going through that?
Well, for me, you know, my stylist is Jason Bolden. Shout out to Jason, who is killing the game. Yes. He's working with so many different people. I think for him and I, first, it's a conversation. Right, like recently we just had a conversation about the Met Gala. We were already talking about what the aesthetic that we want and the look that we want. So from there, from going from that conversation, then Jason goes off and he finds whatever brand that he feels that, you know, he wants to represent that moment. The Oscars was a big moment. And so because of our relationship with Versace, we represented Versace in that moment. And so it's him dealing with Versace and coming up with, you know, my looks. A lot of my looks for moments, carpet looks are custom. Right, they're not. You can't go find them in the store. Like, ain't nobody.
I can't go get them. So I can't get what you want.
You can't go get that. This is custom. This was. It's drawings good about this look. It's
wow.
You know, it's customized. That's what custom means. And so, Jason like to say, "Oh, yes, he's wearing custom Versace." You know, it adds a little boosh to it.
It is a little boosh to it, but I
love
it.
But that's a part of the process. And so the process from there was to, you know, for him to kind of, after our conversation, go to the designers, talk about, okay, this is what we're thinking. Let's sketch it out. And so they kind of sketch it out. We go through different phases of the sketches to see, okay, is it single button? Is it double breasted? Is it this? What color? So it's a process. And then once we get to, you know, picking out of the process of the drawings, then now it goes into motion, right? Now they got to start making the looks and so forth. And so I go down my process. My wife goes down her process. Her stylist is Thomas. My stylist is Jason. At some point, they will have a conversation. Hey, what are you thinking? Hey, what brand are you thinking? So forth and so on. So they're doing their back channel things, going behind the scenes. We don't never know what each other is wearing.
Before y'all, so when you go to the show, when you see it for the first time, you seen it for the first time?
Well, in the hotel room. Like,
really?
Yeah, my wife's like, show D, he hasn't seen it. I'm like, yeah. But I already know, like, I don't need to because I know Thomas and I know Gab and I know how they work together. Mm. Right? Yeah. And Thomas sometime will reach out to me and say, hey, D, what do you think about this? I'm thinking about, and so that happens on occasion, but then sometimes they just go cook and then they come out of the lab and they like, this is what we doing. And we like, bam, this is what we doing. So it's so many different ways to do it. I don't think it's just one way, but ultimately you want to be in sync in some way, some capacity. And so it's very rare that you see Gab and I on a carpet and we're not in sync because one, our stylists are in sync. And so that allows us to have, you know, nonverbal communication through them.
How important is it to be in sync with your partner?
Whew, well, that's the everyday challenge. You know what? That's like every day you have to work and being in sync. And some days you just don't even, you know, some days you don't want to be in sync.
Mm-hmm.
You want to have your attitude. You want to feel the way you feel. You want to stand on your business.
What?
You'd be like, I don't even care about business. This is what I've. So, but obviously that's what we all shooting for. We all shooting for the relationship with your partner to feel like the relationship with your best friend.
Okay.
Right? Because the relationships with your best friends or best friend is seamless. It's pouring into each other. And it's being able to tell each other when things like it, like your best friend could tell you, oh no, Bob, you bullshit. And you ain't gonna even take it a certain way.
True.
Let your wife be like, Bob, you bullshit. You're gonna take it a certain way. And a lot of it is because of it's so hard to build that trust, which is crazy with someone that you're with more than anybody. It's so hard to build that trust, have that safe space of trust because of the dynamics of in relationship of you know, of however the structure of your relationship is set up. It's different of when you have your relationship with your best friend, which is a soulmate as well, right?
I like that.
I always tell people to get to have a great relationship here, you have to have that same great relationship that you have with your best friend. Your ability to be vulnerable with them, your ability to listen when they have something to say to you, to disagree with you, to help you grow in moments. Because there's times in your relationships where you like your wife telling you something, you like, nah, don't tell me that.
Right.
I want to learn. Nah, I get to that answer on my own.
Right.
Right. Because of maybe the way that it's. Maybe the way they're doing it, or the time they're doing 100%. It, or where they're doing it. And so that's the hard part about relationships is if you can get all your relationships to flow and to feel as seamless as your best friend relationship, then you got something. And that's the challenge, and that's the goal, is try to get there. And a lot of people try to use their relationships like, oh, we're friends. You're supposed to be my best friend. Well, me and my best friend don't flow like this.
You're right.
We don't fight when we challenge each other.
Right.
We just challenge each other and be like, all right, bro, I disagree with you, but, you know, I see your point.
Facts.
But in relationships sometimes, that don't happen. Now you walking out the room, she walking out the room, you not speaking, she not speaking. And so for me, personally, I think the journey for relationships, and this is just my perspective, is to be like water. It's to flow like your relationship.
Bruce Lee, I get it.
Right?
Yeah.
And a lot of them, they don't flow. And a lot of it's for a lot of reasons.
And so it's funny because I think ego has a lot to do with that for a lot of us. And sometimes, in fact, we're growing, and we're creatures that grow at all times. We're always evolving, always growing. So how you maybe look at something when you're 25, as you're 35, and you look at it as you're 45, it's going to just be different. You look at the world different. You travel around the world. So I get the fact that we're always evolving and trying to keep that sync. It's almost like trying to keep, I use it as this, you're trying to keep sync, like you're trying to charge a battery of a phone, and you got your sync cord, you got your sync cable, but you've been using the same cable since 1997. Why that cable can get busted? Either gonna try to use that same sync cable, ain't gonna always charge all the time, ain't gonna always link up all the time, so you either gonna get a new cable, you're gonna have to upgrade it, or understand that at some point this shit ain't gonna work. And so I think just as human beings is, and because sometimes you got to look at that as, that syncing is not only with your significant other, it's with
your
friends.
You're right.
All relationships that you may have.
All relationships to me boil down to trust. Obviously, communication is what helps that, it allows that relationship to continue to grow, right? If you continue to communicate with each other, but you got to have trust. And I'm not talking about, you know what I mean? Like the worldly trust when it comes to relationship is woman need to trust that a man ain't going to cheat. And man need to, whatever our trust is, all right? But to me, that's so like, let's go deeper than that, okay?
Right, let's go deeper.
And so when you're vulnerable, when you feel safe, when you feel like you're in the space of non-judgment, that's the space of trust. And I need to trust that when we go through something, that your girlfriends are not going to know everything we go through. I need to trust that if I'm being vulnerable on this, that stays between us. It's a lot of areas of trust that in relationships get broken down.
Yeah.
But in relationships with same sex, you and your homie, it's a trust built there because, you know, you ain't worried about that homie going and blasting you or saying something.
Right.
About what you've shared in vulnerable moments,
right?
or, you know, like all these things, right? And so, like, trust is something that really needs to be worked on. And when you get into relationships, sometimes it's built, it comes in built on the wrong things. It comes in built on lust. It comes in built on this analogy that love is gonna, you know, it's love. I'm in love.
Right.
It's built on, you know, the situation, you know, it's situational. It's built on all these different things when these other relationships that flow like water ain't built on all that. It ain't even built on being in the same place. You and your homie, y'all cannot see each other for, y'all could just be talking. Y'all cannot see each other for months. And when y'all get together, what's the vibe?
It's love.
It's love. It's linked. You can be vulnerable. You can share. You can. But when you ain't seen that other person like that, now it's an issue. It's problems. You ain't doing this. You ain't doing that. I'm not both ways.
Right. Right.
And so it's the journey, right? And so for us, like even in my relationship, you try to eliminate as much of the things you don't have to decide on, or you don't have to have judgment on as much as possible. Like, so you can at least try to focus on the actual relationship. Because there's so many parts to it of where judgment and no trust lies.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. People don't always realize just how much their negative thoughts and experiences stick with them and weigh them down. You may find your brain constantly running through a highlight reel of bad moments. That comment your friend made last week that hurt your feelings. That frustrating thing your mom does, or that silly thing you said in a meeting. Maybe it's time to get it all off your chest. Whether it's a tiny annoyance or something much bigger, talking about it can give you some relief and lead you to a potential solution. That's where therapy comes in. It's a safe space to share whatever's weighing you down and learn to process it so your internal highlight reel can focus on the good stuff. And BetterHelp offers affordable online therapy on a schedule that works for you. Connect with a licensed therapist by text, phone, or video call. Start the process in minutes and switch therapist anytime. Let it out with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Wade today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Wade.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, so everyone is talking about this 65 games in the NBA.
Ooh, yes, they have been.
Okay, so
we're going to talk
about already been dealing with this in a smaller but not smaller way. Is I dealt with the same thing in my shoe deal over my years of playing in the NBA.
That's right.
If you don't play a certain amount of games, they prorate you.
Yes.
Okay, so
yes.
It's been multiple years where I've given back multiple millions of dollars because I didn't reach the game. So this is not nothing new in how they do things. This may be something new into the NBA's regular season schedule. Nike, Converse, Jordan, they've been prorating you. If you don't reach this certain amount of games, you got to give back money. So it's 2 years in a row. You can go, look, I think I played 51 games 2 years in a row for the Miami Heat. I lost $2.4 billion both years in a row.
Damn.
They prorated me. And so they just, all they're doing is taking a chapter out of the book of these brands who have been doing this already. It's saying, if you can't show up for me in the because the contract is 82 games, right? Or whatever it is. So if you can't show up for 65 games, then we prorate you. And so they're doing it in the NBA. They're just not taking away from their money. They're just not allowing them to get to that, that real bag. And that's the proration of the NBA. Oof. The one thing about the game, it's just like even watching the game. Great players find all the way. Like, we're going to get around. We're going to get around the system. Okay, the refs got a certain way you're calling it. We're going to get around it. Okay. Right? Great players know how to trick the refs. You know how to make the rules work in your favor.
Of course.
Right? All these things. And so this is the rule now. We work a way around it. And then they'll throw another one in when they found a way to work a way around
it.
I think people continue to forget, and people said all the time, the NBA is a business. Okay? In my business, I need you to show up this many times. If you don't right now, you're not going to be up for these awards. If you're not up for these awards, then you're not up for this amount of money. And so then there's so many, you know, what do you do, right? But ultimately, this is a part of the business. So is it? I think the NBA has continued to do a great job, both when it comes to the benefits of what we've been able to benefit, and also too on the other side, where you don't feel like it's a benefit to you, mm-hmm. but they're doing their job for the fans. That's what their part is for the fans
right.
and for the owners.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so I think we got to understand as players, the one thing that as a player you don't really understand, because you don't need to, but it's the both sides of this whole thing. And we're so focused on the one side, just like the owners are focused on their one side, that no, realistically, it all makes sense, right? Like, both sides we can understand, right? We can understand why the fans and why the owners want to see you play 65 games if I'm giving you $200 million. We get that.
Right.
But as a player, we also understand why a player, if he's injured, you know, if he's hurt, if, you know, he has something going on in his family, if he's been suspended because of a moment of a lapse moment, whatever, he don't reach those games, it sucks. But I think we all got to do a better job of understanding that it's more than one side to something. And we got to figure, we got to get to figuring out how to understand each other's position, right? And stop just defending our position. I'm glad you, that was a bar. And David Fizdale, shout out to my brother Fizz. Fizz said this to me, very similar to that one day. He said, if we defended our position, if we defended our position in sport, like we defend our position, then we'd be a hell of a defensive team. And I thought that was so cold, because when you and I, when we believe in something, right. we would defend that position and we would not move off of it.
Yep.
And so he used that as a double entendre to say, if we defended our positions in basketball, like we defend our positions on stuff, then we'd be a hell of a defensive team. Mm. And I was like, damn, that's a bar.
That is a bar. Did the team take heed to that?
I don't know. I went in the locker room. But I'm just going to say he ain't the coach of that team no more.
Damn. But that is a great.
It's a great analogy.
If you do that, it's crazy, because it could be. So I always had a thought, because that's a great analogy, right? And there's a bunch of coaches that have tons of great analogies. What are the factors, in your opinion, that make either the coach succeed or the player succeed, or both, vice versa? One situation, not another situation?
It's so many different factors, bro. You know what I mean? Like, it's hard to just break down. Let me just use Miami, right? Because I spent 16 years there. Everybody don't have a culture. And when I say that, everybody don't have rules and regulations that makes everyone and holds everyone accountable.
Okay.
To a certain standard, right? Spo has that in his back pocket. So no matter what kind of team Spo has, he has the culture behind him. He has the rules and regulations of being a Miami Heat player that you just have to follow. Now, they adjust some of them as the time go on, but a lot of them don't go nowhere neither. And so, you know, even in the midst of having a bad roster, that people would say, they can still have a good year, because it's expectations of what you're supposed to do here. And it's not even on Spo. When you sign up for the Heat, that's what Mickey and what Pat has set as a standard.
Got it. Okay.
And so I think for him, that's a bonus that he has, because sometimes you get players that come in that your coaching style doesn't work with them. You know what I mean? Like, just because you coach me or you coach LeBron and we've accepted this, don't mean you can do the same thing to Jermaine O'Neal and Chris Bosh and these guys, right? But what he got behind him is, well, this is our standards. So you either doing this or you're out of here. You doing this, they're gonna get, you know what I mean?
Right,
and
so that makes sense.
Everybody don't have that. And so I think, you know, to be a good coach or to be a coach that, you know, multiple people like to play for, et cetera, you know, just listen to Candace. Pat Summitt didn't just coach her as a basketball player. She coached her as a person,
right,
holistically. And in the midst of that, she understood what was going on in her personal life. She understood that Candace get bored with the game of basketball. She needs to let her just go wild for a moment. Like, it's these all these things you understand. And so it's hard as coaches to do that because you got so many players coming in and out.
Right.
And so it's hard to keep everybody in, okay, this is what makes me a great coach. So it's good to have this backbone right here that says, no, these are our standards that you have to follow. And so that allows Spo to just go do his job and be disappointed at the standards. Now I can go just do my job. And my job is to make sure that you guys are prepared. Right? That's that's what Miami is so great at. Miami's prepared. No matter who's in the lineup, they're prepared. It ain't about the talent. It's about the preparation that you feel when you go out there, that you know everything they want to do offensively and everything they want to do defensively and everything you need to do. You're prepared for that. And so he can focus on that and not have to worry about all these housekeeping things that a lot of coaches got to worry about.
You've been part of this culture and creating that, building that culture or sustaining that culture in Miami and then went to other places. How hard is it to bring culture with you?
You can't. It's so hard. You can bring it to the players, right? You can. LeBron James can leave Miami after 4 years and go back to Cleveland and take some of the culture with him of this is what we did, this is how we do it, to the players. But the front office run different. Their mentality is different. The players that they look at and bring in are different. Mm-hmm. You know, you got to understand, like, the Miami Heat, everyone is asking, you know, why they've been so consistently so good is because it's certain pillars of people, of quality of people. The people that they're bringing in have some of the same intangibles. Some organizations just going to grab talent. Mm-hmm. They ain't worried about their personality traits, how their personality going to fit with this. Like, the Heat has a certain...
Got it.
You know what I mean? These pillars that these players have to have that they go out and look at. And so, yeah, you can individually take some culture. And if you are got that status of, you know, of being one of the best of the NBA at that time, yeah, some people are going to follow. Now, how do you get everybody? You're going to get the coaches to buy in? You're going to get the front office to buy in? How are you going to get everybody to buy into your mentality of, oh, no, we need this culture?
That makes sense.
I realized that when I went to Chicago was I enjoyed my one season in Chicago more than most people think. But also, too, it was not a built-in culture there, right? And the built-in culture is the accountability that is needed from all of us. Like, I didn't even have accountability there. I was outside my box a little bit doing things I never did because the accountability wasn't there. And you see it right away as a player. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like in Miami, if the second, the third unit messed the play up, we're not moving on. You're going to run it again. And you're going to run it again. And you're going to run it again till you get it right. In other places, second unit mess it up, we just keep going. He's like, hey, hold on. Where's the count? I got to play with these dudes.
Got you.
You know what I mean? And like that was one of my conversations to Fred when I got to Chicago was we were in training camp. And I'm like, Fred, they just messed the play up. But we ain't going to run it again. And that wasn't his mentality. That wasn't his structure at the time. He was first unit, get it right, let's go. And I'm like, but Fred, I got to play with these guys. Mm. Like I need them to understand all the options, not just the handoff shot. How about the handoff, no shot, let's go to the second option. Ain't nothing there, let's go to the third option. And so, you know, once I got there, I realized that, you know, it was an organization that was looking for culture and that didn't have it. And so me as a player, yes, I'm trying to bring in certain things, but at the same time, I'm enjoying not having the culture a little bit too. The player saw me jumping on a plane going here and there, you know what I'm saying? So I wasn't no good, you know what I mean? Because I'm enjoying the no accountability a little bit.
Like, it's
the
same. Took full
advantage. Well, I was 35. I'm like, well, I want to, you know, I ain't never did this. So, you know, I think that's the one thing we see. And that's why you can see that the teams are consistent. Outside of the ones that, you know, are able to draft, put together good teams over the course of time, how many ones are, what's the team that are consistent year after year after year after year? It ain't many of those teams. And those teams have what you call accountability.
So now we got, we're coming up on March Madness. We're in March right now. We're coming into the
best time of the year for sports,
right?
For basketball.
Now, have you watched any of your games lately?
I mean, listen, I've been watching, I'm on my travels.
Right.
I haven't been watching full games. But when I get an opportunity to, yes, I tune in. But I've been trying to, you know, keep up as much as possible. But it's, I mean, women's basketball right now is,
bro,
is up. Like, it's
it is
up.
Up.
It's exciting. It's what we know as basketball fans. We know this already. We know the women that they hoop. You know what I'm saying? But now the not necessary knowledgeable basketball fan is getting a chance to see it. And there's certain players that, you know, we get to look at. Well, obviously, Caitlin Clark and Juju. And, you know, it's so many great players now in this era that's coming that now we look at them and say, oh, man, we're thankful for them that they're great in this moment because it's the perfect time for y'all to be as great as y'all are with the temperature of where the world is. And right. So very thankful that we have generational talent going on right now when the world seems ready to be able to take the women's sport to that next level. And when I say the world, I mean like these big brands, these big corporations, because they're the ones who do it.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Like they're the ones who put them on TV. They're the ones who give profiles out. They're the ones who allow us to get to know and fall in love with the athlete outside of the 30, 40 points that they're scoring. And so that's why we love Caitlin Clark now. We're getting a chance to see her. We get a chance to learn about her. We get a chance to follow her. And we want more of that. We want more for Juju. Like, I feel like Juju needs a little bit more shine this year. I feel like we need a little bit more storytelling about Juju. You know what I mean? Not just her points, but like, I want to know more.
You think the Final Four might, or the March Madness, as we
I
get
hope
to,
so.
We get that to her?
Yeah. I mean, you know, we all, listen, March is the greatest time of the year when it comes to sports because of the competition, right? Because of the win or go home mentality. Mm-hmm. And whenever you got to, whenever it's a win or go home mentality, you're going to get the best performance. You even know, even in sport, I mean, even in trying to win championships or trying to go to the playoffs, the closeout game is the hardest game because right. that's your last breath. And you're going, for your last breath, you're going to give it all you got. And so if I'm up 3-0 and we got to close out a team, that fourth game is the hardest game. And so that's why the March Madness is so great, because it's win or take your ass home. And everything that these players give, right, is what we all love to watch. And that's everything that they have.
Right.
And so this is when I watch. This is when I really watch, you know.
Why are you watching it? What memories does it bring back for you?
Just knowing that you've been on that stage before and knowing that, you know, for me, knowing that I represented on that stage to the best of my abilities. And you know what it all feels like. You know what the media days are like. You know what the in-between practice sessions are like when the crowds are there, when the media is there. You know that when the players come out of their hotel, they got a band playing for them as they get on the bus. And, you know what I mean? You know the team and the community is traveling with the guy. Like, you know all this. And so you know how big of a moment that this is for sports and for these individual players. Like, I can go back and I remember the hotels we stayed in and walking out of my room and hearing the band and seeing the cheerleaders and seeing all the fans as we walk through before we get on the bus. And, you know what I mean? And so it makes it's a little bit more, heightened. You know, everyone's just a little bit more intense and you feel it from everybody. And so that makes the moments a little bit more intense. And when you're able to win in those moments, it makes it feel us a little bit better.
I love it.
And so, man, I love it. You know, I didn't get a chance, like I said, I didn't get a chance to win a national championship, but I got a chance to experience the NCAA tournament 2 years in a row when I played. And just still to this day, one of my favorite things to experience was that win or go home mentality.
I love it. That's I don't have anything like that, by the way, so I can't share an experience with you, but I share it through you.
Yeah, appreciate it.
I love that. I love that for you.
Yeah, I love that for you. And I love it for – March is coming. I love it for all the kids that's about to get a chance to – I think the one thing is, too, about March and also about the playoffs, right? Like, what I love about the in-season tournament or what I love about the play-in tournament or what I love about these alternate leagues or whatever it is, some great players cannot get to being a great player because of they're not on that stage. And just because you're good at basketball, because you're great, don't mean you're always going to be on that stage, right? It's so many things that got to go right. But we are able to see in March Madness, you're able to see stars develop and rise. You're able to see some players that you thought he was good go to that level. And it's always Cinderella stories, always players that come out of nowhere. And it's the same thing happened in the NBA playoffs. And, you know, I mean, you're going to see certain players get to that playoffs, and you're going to see them rise, you're going to see them not rise. And that's where stars are kind of made and built in these moments. And that's why we love these moments, because it's like, let me see what you built up. Let me see what you got. And, you know, that's where our stars are. Our stars are built in these moments.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. The Daily Show podcast has everything you need to stay on top of today's news and pop culture. You get hilarious, satirical takes on entertainment, politics, sports, and more from Jon and the team of correspondents and contributors. The podcast also has content you can't get anywhere else, like extended interviews and a roundup of the weekly headlines. Listen to The Daily Show, Ears Edition, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My name is Johnny B. Good, and I'm the host of the new podcast, Creating a Con, The Story of BitCon. Over this 9-part series, I'll explore the life and crimes of my best friend, Ray Trapani.
I always wanted to be a criminal.
If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
You see, Ray has this unique ability to find loopholes and exploit them.
They collected $30 million. There were headlines about it.
His company, CentraTech, was one of the hottest crypto startups in 2017. It was going to change the world, until it didn't.
I came into my office, opened my email, and the subject heading was FBI request.
It was only a matter of time before the truth came out.
You can only fake it till you make it for so long before they find out that your Harvard degree is not so crimson.
How could you sit there and do something that you know will objectively cause more harm in the world?
Listen to Creating a Con, The Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bob's phone just went off as an alarm at 3:05 because he's from
Dade County. Always. It's going to always. It's, ever since I moved here, I can never going to forget from 3:05 ever. So now I have a question because I saw it on Instagram the other day. Yesterday, actually. I actually wanted to talk about this actually a few episodes ago about how and when the fingernails in the painting. How and when did you start with the painting the fingernails?
Yeah, I think I started around 2007, 2008 time. It really started from my toes first. And it's funny because I retired and my toes don't look like they did when I played. Like my stuff ain't all bruised up.
Gotcha.
But it really started me where I didn't like the way my toenails looked for a long time. It was just, you know, from beating, hitting the shoes, you know, all them Euro and that stop and go game I had, my stuff was beat down. So like, you know, my stuff was busted, man. My stuff was black. They was fungused out. They was bruised up. Not really fungus, but they were bruised up. But yeah, I saw a friend of my wife's, he had black toenail polish on and I said, shout out to Jay. And I looked at it, man. And I was like, I want to do that. Now, I really want to do that, one, because I want to put a little shine to my toes. I want to bring a little something to them because they look, I didn't want to take off my socks. I used to wear socks on the beach with sandals.
I still do.
But a lot of it was because of my toenails.
Exactly.
100%. And my toes are already jacked up, but, you know, it 100%. Is what it is. So anyway, I waited until that following summer. So probably like 2007, summer 2008, I can't remember. And I was on vacation and I was like, you know, can I get a little pain? Because I started doing manis and petties after my, in 2004. My first mani and petty was after my game versus Baron Davis when I hit the game winner in game one.
In life?
In life.
Why did you get it that day? What was your reason?
At the time, Zaire and Zaire mom set up a spa day for me because it was after the first game of the playoffs and we had a day off the next day and she set up a spa day. And so I went over to get a massage. And then in the massage, they also had a mani and pedi. And I've already knew about it and I had never did it before because at the time, it just wasn't a cool thing for men to do.
Right.
To go sit and get their feet done and get their hands done. And so then I was like, you know what? Yeah, I'm here. My feet hurt. I just got done. I'm wearing these Converse that ain't good at the time. My feet was killing me. And so I'm like, yes, I need a little extra, little love, a little massage, a little warm water, a little soap. And so I got my first mani and pedi and I was like, oh, I like this. Like, I like how my hands felt. I like how my feet felt. I feel like I was walking on clouds. I was like, I'm in. And so that was 2004. And then 2007, 2008 is when I introduced pain into my toenails. But for 2 years, I didn't show my teammates. Every time the season started, I would take them off and just wear the regular because I didn't want nobody making fun of me in the locker room. And then I started growing and getting more mature. And then I stopped giving a f- about what people had to say. And I just laid them joints out there like, we out here. And then they smashed me in the locker room, smashed. And then I got over that. And it was just a day of getting smashed and we moved on. And so it was something I started doing. And then from there, I started to, you know, bring it up to obviously to my nails. And it was really just getting my nails done. And at first, I would just get a buff, just keep them a little shine, right? And then actually, one day, I saw MJ nails, and MJ had clear polish on his nails. And I'm talking about MJ, I'm talking about Mike Jordan. Yes. And I was like, oh, yeah, I can get the clear polish. Mike got it. You know what I'm saying? Because at first, I was like, I can't get no polish on my nails. I just got to do buff. Because I come from a community where if you do anything outside of the masculine norm, you're a gay.
Right.
And so I was trying to like stay away from certain things because I was trying to stay away from certain conversations that people would say about me, right? This is when I cared. And then I went with the clear for a while. And then I was on vacation again. And one day I was like, let me hit a little sweat. Let me get my thumb. Let me put a little color on there. And so it was a slow process for me to do it. But eventually, this is something that I wanted to do because like I'm a fly dude. And I'm a fly dude, right? You know what I'm saying? And it's just a part of my aesthetic. Like when I decide to put, like right now, I got like, you know, we went to the Oscars and I got black and white on my hands because, you know, I wore black and white and I wanted to kind of match and vibe. But for me, man, it's just an extension of my art and my creativity, you know what I mean? That extends out to my fingertips. I know it was something that when we came into the world that was presented as women do this only, but that's because that's what was presented at the time. That doesn't mean that's the only way.
Right.
And so I love to see like the young players now, you know, they got way more artwork and they do way more than even I. But I'm as an older gentleman, I'm out here in the public eye and people still going to comment on the fact that I get my nail. I've been doing it for 17 years.
Damn.
This is 2024. I've been doing it. I mean, not 17 years. I'm tripping. How many years I've been doing it? I've been doing it since 2007. I said 17 years. I've been doing it from 2007. Which puts me at
that's 17 years. Yeah,
my math was right.
Yeah, your math was right.
So with that being said, like for me, is every culture, every generation, they do it different. And in my culture, in my generation of the kind of, you know, man that I present myself as to the world, this is a part of how I want to be. It doesn't, you know, for me, once I got away from personally feeling a way about, you know, my masculinity or what people would say about my masculinity, and understanding that I'm just me and I'm going to do all the things I want to do. And like, I can't care about what others think, because they're going to think about it, whatever way you do it. I mean, I've been freed myself in fire, you know what I'm saying? My nail, but, and as you move too, man, I get so many compliments on my nail and I get so many compliments from women. And you know, when we put on as men, we put on clothes, we put on everything. Perfume. I mean, with perfume, cologne, whatever, however, you know, the name is, we put on perfume, we put on cologne, we put on deodorant, whatever we do, everything we putting on is for women.
Everything.
When you hooping, when you young, you putting on because a woman was watching you, like, oh, I'm about to go hard. And so when you get that, when you walk through the world, like I walk through the world and you get, you know, you get women like, I really, because it shows a certain way you take care of yourself and a level to detail of how you take care of yourself. It's just like, man, when we look at women, nails being done, their feet being done, certain things, we're like, okay, I see how she take care of herself. I like that. Women like that too, right? It's a part of it. And so it's a part of my aesthetic. You see how I take care of myself in general. This is what you see on my hands, but you see the whole life. I don't even like leaves in my car from the ground, and it could be fall. I don't like it. Like right now, I know I got leaves in my car because I've been stepping in my car. And I don't like it. Mm. Need to get the joint washed. I mean, even lied to you.
But that's that shows. And I've always kind of known that about you. A level of like how you like your.
Yeah, bro. I got a little OCD in me.
Like you want to like you like, look good, feel good, and the stuff around you look good and feel good.
Bro, I grew up that way. You know what I'm saying? I grew up on Wesley Snipes. You know what I'm saying? In the movie saying that. You know what I mean? Like White Man Can't Jump. That's how we roll. We gotta look good. Like Dion, baby, we gotta look good first. If I don't look good, then I don't feel good. And if I don't feel good, I can't play good. And so I need to look good first. I need to feel good. Then I'm gonna play good.
I love it.
So, I mean, and that's it in life. That's how I carry myself. If I feel like I look good, my version of what I look like, then now I feel good. And when I feel good, then now I'm about to give you all this. You know what I'm saying? And so, yeah, man, this is just something that, you know, I saw obviously in this new generation, a lot of more of young men are a little bit more comfortable of doing it. But when I did, it wasn't something that was necessary. I'm not the first one to do it, but when I did, it wasn't necessarily something that was kind of say allowed in the space of you being, you know, a cis man. You know what I mean? A hetero man. You had to do certain things to be hetero. Right. You had to grow all your chest hair and keep your underarms hairy. And you know what I mean? Like, it was certain things. It's like, oh, I'm a man. Well, you know, I hope that, you know, we continue to break down that it's just not one way that a man, especially a black man, needs to be. Right. That there's so many different ways that you can exist as a man. And everyone has their ways. I'm not telling everybody to go out and get their nails painted. That's not for you if it's not for you.
Right.
Right. And allow it to be for the people that it's for. And don't just, you know, you'll need to put titles on someone because they're doing something that's out of the norm of what you learn that's accepted. You can be how you want to be. And so that's kind of, this is the freedom right here. This is me free.
Right.
And you know what I'm saying? And like, that's how I will always be. You know, as much as we can be, you want to find freedom in this world. That's the goal. That's the journey. And so this is me finding freedom in my body. Mm. You know what I'm saying? But it takes time to get to that place.
Get that peace.
You get people say, man, I used to be a fan, man. I ain't a fan no more. Great. I love it. I love it.
You know what's funny to me? I remember when we were in China and a Terry Crews interview came out. And I was like, yo, and I remember you, because you talked about it. And you're not one, which I've always loved, to be like, oh, listen, this happened, and kind of talk about it. You know, that's not your game. And I appreciate how, and you even appreciate like how Terry Crews kind of like shared that conversation as far as like, just like, because it was, and everything you said happened, he repeated verbatim. So it was kind of dope. But when we were somewhere at a festival, what I witnessed was that it was cool to see, one, how you can tell that you're comfortable in this world. And I think it kind of goes with the nails. I think it goes with everything about your life. It's a comfort level there, which I respect.
Yeah, thank you.
And I think that's something that as
it's something, men, it's something I have to work hard at.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think, because you said, at first you were scared to put out your toes until
No, this is not something that you just, I mean, I wasn't just born with this. I had to work myself to this. I had to be put in situations to show me what really matters and what don't in my life. But, you know, man, first of all, to the Terry Crews conversation, I appreciate him bringing it to the forefront the way he did, because I'm never bringing it to the forefront. This is a conversation that him and I had as two men. And the reason we had it, the conversation, because we were in the same environment and we had already had some public words going back and forth on social media. Not just what he said about my wife, but I even said, man, somebody take Terry Crews' phone. And we was having a little back and forth. And just the school I come from, man, where I'm from, like, what I do know is beef and things like that. The reason it continues to go, because you don't see each other, you don't talk to each other, whatever the case may be, and it just grow. Now you hate somebody, you forget why you hate them.
True.
Right? And so for me, when I saw Terry Crews, and I knew we had some conversations, you know, publicly, and also, too, that he had some stuff that, you know, he expressed about my wife, I wanted to go up and I wanted to address it. But also, too, I look around at this festival and there's a handful of black men here. I am a fan of Terry Crews. Like, I am. What? You want to talk about fried?
Right.
Craig and Day Day.
Like, yeah.
You want to talk about his. So I've become a fan. And so, you know, I've never had any ill will versus him. But, you know, obviously in that moment, you know, with everything happened with my wife. But when I seen him, I saw him over there with his wife. We were there. We all was there to have a great time. But just understand that we're going to be uncomfortable if we don't have this conversation.
Right.
It's no reason for me to be uncomfortable, you to be uncomfortable, my wife to be uncomfortable, your wife to be uncomfortable, because we're in the same environment right now.
Right.
So man to man, let's have this man to man conversation, because that's what most people don't do. Especially nowadays, a lot of things are over the airwaves. You know, facts. UD called them studio gangsters. Mm. It's a lot of studio gangsters. And I'm not saying I'm a gangster. I ain't saying I'm walking up to you ready to throw them things. Now, I'm a man. I got to protect myself. But I ain't walk up to Terry Crews on no, I'm about to throw no hands. I walked up to him respectfully. What's up, black man?
Right.
Right? I see another black king in here. I'm going to pay my respects. But also, too, we got something to talk about. Mm. And what we got to talk about is what we eventually start talking about. And that was a moment, you know, for him to do what he did was to say, you know, where's your queen? You know, I want to go and I want to personally apologize. Because, did I feel he needed to? Yes. You know what I mean? But he had to feel he needed to. But
right.
I provided the space for that. And what he said was, what I loved is that grace was given and he said he didn't deserve it. And to me, that was so powerful, because in my life, I only want people around me that gives me grace, because I give grace. You know what I mean? Like, that's true love for me, for people who's going to give you grace. Because we're all going to need it. It's going to be some point where we all going to need grace, because we're not going to be who you thought we were. Mm-hmm. And we're going to have lapsing moments. And we're going to, you know, it's going to be a lot of things, and we're going to need grace. And so, yeah, I'm going to give him grace, because that's how I live life. I feel like grace should be given. And so I was so thankful for him. And I reached out to him afterwards and just sent him a salute or whatever the case may be, because that was two men having, two grownups having a conversation together. And it was no motherfucker, and it was no flexing no muscles. It was, hey, I know what I did wrong in this situation. Let me go right my wrong. Where's your queen? And so forth and so on. But if I don't go up and I don't extend that hand, if I don't go up and I don't address him and also let him know, I see your presence here, black man, then we never get to that.
Right.
And so, no, it's not even about smoke. Like, I don't call smoke. My life doesn't even allow me to focus on smoke. But if we've had something that needs to be addressed between us and we're in the same space, then you just, I don't want nobody to be like, but you just seen me.
Right.
Why you didn't say that stuff to me? Because we're going to get behind this microphone and we're going to say certain things. And so if I see you, now this is my opportunity, if I need to present what it is. But also, too, I'm letting you know that shit you're talking about don't really mean nothing. Like, real. Like, that don't mean nothing, man. We all in this world trying to exist.
Yes,
we all in this world trying to figure it out. Sometimes it's going to be wrong. It's going to be mistakes. It's going to be made. And we're going to have people around us that's going to help us and give us grace to come back from that. And so, yeah, Terry Crews is a big staple in the black community. And so we don't want to have beef with Terry Crews, and Terry Crews don't want to have beef with us. We all in the same community together. And so for us to be able to squash that beef, to be able to share food together, share wine together, share a beautiful moment, that was grown up shit.
That was
a dope light. And so I salute that black man just the same way he saluted me for standing on business. And that business is standing on respect of, you know, two men that had some words that needed to address those words. And then we move on.
I love it. So we've answered this question usually the same way. And it's the question that you always ask all your guests on the Why. And I ask this because it may change, or it may be a little different, or maybe modified. So what's your why now? Like, what is your why?
Oh, what's my why? Access to the life I want. My why is access to the life I want.
Nice.
And so to have the access to the life I want, the work got to be put in by me. My leadership in what I want has to be told by me, has to be shown by me. And so that's what I'm off doing. I'm off, you know, working hard to have the access to the life that I want for not only myself, but I want for my family in the now and in the future. And so a little unconventional way it may look of doing it, but this is the way that, you know, I needed to do it, you know, and that's one of the reasons why I've allowed myself to be freelance in life and not have a job. I got to really time stamp, you know, into, because I need to create the freedom to be able to go out and create the life I want to live and the access I want to live. And access to things that I want to be a part of. How I'm going to grow my wealth. I got to have access to these funds. I got to have access to these investors. I got to have access to this, and this. And so access is my thing. And being real intentional in 2024 is what was on my vision board. And I've been intentional about where I go, where I show up, where I'm spending my time, and how I'm spending it. And so my why right now is a 2024 why, is to create the access to the life that, you know, I want my family to have eventually and to live.
I love it. I love the fact that it might be a little different every time. So that's dope, because why it kind of evolves.
It evolves day to day.
Right.
Your why is not a finale. Like, you know what I mean? Your why is, you know, you can wake up tomorrow and have a whole different, you realize that, oh man, I've been going down this street. Let me now go down this one. And that changes a little bit of your why. Now, it's something going to be in there that's connectivity.
Right.
But like I said, I have a 2024 why. And that's the why I'm focusing on right now. You know, the plan for the future, you know, be present in the moment, learn from the past. But I'm in the moment as I'm out there working, planning for my future.
I'm going to see if I'm going to, because that's such a bar. So I want to make sure I don't get, because that might be on a t-shirt, just letting you know. Plan for the future, live in the moment, be present in the moment.
Be present in the moment.
And what about the past? And you said, what was it about the past?
I said, learn from the past. Yeah, the past is what you learn from.
Learn from the past.
The present, the right now is where I'm present in this moment. Like every day I try to wake up to be present. And that's the thing that we don't do, because we're worrying about the past, we're worrying about the future. And so we take ourselves out of the present. So let's be present in the day. Let's plan for the future. And let's learn from my past. My day is a cycle of that, right? My day is a cycle of learning from something. Made that mistake again. Damn. I didn't make it again. Learn from it. But I want to be present here, right? Like today, we're shooting the wind down. I'm not doing the Why podcast. I'm not doing, you know, anything else in my business. I'm now present in the wind down. But also, too, the wind down is about the future, too. Yeah. And so we're preparing for the future, sitting here shooting the wind down. And so that's kind of how I look at life, man. Like when I go out here and I'm trying to create this access for my family in all the ways, I'm preparing for the future. But you know, in real time, the work is being done now in the present.
Right.
And then I'm learning from everything in the past that I either didn't know or that I messed up on when it comes to allowing these things to become what they are.
Right.
And so, yeah, bro, that's what I'm doing.
And this is the end of the wind down. We out. And that's a wrap.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. Join late night legend Jon Stewart and the best news team for today's biggest headlines, exclusive extended interviews, and more. Now this is a second term we can all get behind. Listen to The Daily Show Ears Edition on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.